Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Robert Hale, Undersecretary of Defense Comptroller at the U.S. Department of Defense. Also joining us today from IBM is John Bongelis. So, Bob, I have the pleasure of talking to many of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you leveraging partnerships to improve management operations and program outcomes?
Well, that's a good question because let me turn to the private sector first, especially in this environment where we are trying to reduce, in some cases, our use of contractors. I think that we are at risk of sending the wrong message. The Department of Defense absolutely depends on the private sector to make national security work. We don't produce any weapons. They are produced for us entirely by the private sector. We need the special expertise. In my case, maybe it's audit expertise and others that we get from the private sector, but there are many other areas where we need the expertise. So if there are people listening out there that are in the private sector, I sure hope they don't take the wrong message away when we say that we are looking to cut back on growth or even the absolute numbers of contractors. We depend heavily on the private sector and will continue to do so. I think there's increasing partnership among agencies. I mentioned it briefly in the last section. A number of agencies are involved, but the State Department is most involved. They are our daily partners in war, and we need them very much. I'll give you an example. We wanted our commanders in Afghanistan very much wanted to build a specific example, a power plant in the Kandahar region of Afghanistan. This was a hearts and mind kind of activity. They felt that we could do something to help the Afghan people that the Taliban could not, and that it would set us apart in a way that they felt would help meet our national security objectives. It was a great idea, but fundamentally, the Department of Defense does not have the legal authority to build power plants. We tried to use some of our other authorities. Congress, I think, legitimately pointed out that we were stretching it. So we partnered with the Department of State, and I should have added, normally this might be done by the Agency for International Development, a part of the Department of State, but they felt they didn't have the capability to operate in a war zone, and they also, frankly, have a much smaller budget than ours, so they had more limited financial flexibility. We partnered with the Department of State, went jointly to the Congress, and said we would like the authority, we call it the Afghan Infrastructure Fund, to do things like the Kandahar power plant. We asked for $400 million this year for the Afghan Infrastructure Fund. And it'll be a dual key activity. That is, every project will be approved both by the Department of State and the Department of Defense. And then we'll work out who actually executes it. If aid can do it, that'd be great. If not, we'll use some of our combat construction people if that's more appropriate given the threats in the area. So I think that's an example of a major project, but there are many others where we are cooperating with the Department of State. We need them in order to maintain, in order to meet our mission objectives in Afghanistan, and we're close partners with them.
Thanks. Bob, turning just for a little bit here, our focus on the position of the CFO, and given the crucial and strategically important role financial information plays in mission and program delivery, how do you think that position of CFO has evolved to become more of a strategic business partner across the department? And if you could, please, what are some of the key characteristics of an effective CFO?
Well, I think it's fair that we are a business partner. You know, many people think the main job of a comptroller is to say no, and that is part of our job. There's a teasing phrase we use to describe our work that comptrollers aren't happy till you're not happy. But in fact, most of the time, if we're doing our job, yes, we may have to say, no, you can't do it that way, but hopefully if we're doing a job, we say, but you could do it this way. Or many times we can just say, yes, I can make that happen for you. So we are a partner in the sense that we can help organizations that have legitimate needs find resources, and I find people are appreciative of our efforts, and most of the time we can say yes, and it'd be my goal to say yes as often as I legally can do so. In terms of key characteristics for an effective public sector CFO, one thing I think is certainly knowledge. I can't imagine taking over being the CFO of one of the most complex and one of the largest organizations in the world without knowing something about the Department of Defense. I guess you could do it, but it would be tough. Certainly an effective CFO needs basic leadership skills. We talked about some of them before. In my view, vision, being able to bring resources to bear, some reasonable ability to measure how you're going and make corrections. And I think an effective CFO in the public sector needs some public sector savvy. Pretty different situation requirements for a CFO in the private sector, where you're going to be very concerned about stocks and basic financing, and the public sector, where you're very concerned about working with the United States Congress, because they're the branch of government, the only branch of government that can make funds available. So I think some understanding and experience with the public sector, with working with Congress, are critical to being an effective CFO in the government.
Bob, I think both of us would be in agreement here, and probably all three of us, that people are truly our most valuable asset, and that's not just a throwaway line. But given, though, DOD's absolute critical mission, your office requires staff with technical skills and expertise. So what are you doing to ensure that you have a well-trained and technical workforce able to meet both the challenges of today as well as the opportunities, let's say, of tomorrow?
Well, that is a major challenge, and in the day-to-day working with budgets and going through some of the chaotic period, frankly, that we're going through as a nation in terms of our economic situation, it's easy to lose sight of the people that are working for me directly, which are a fairly small number, but also the 68,000 people that are working throughout the defense financial management workforce. But that's why I have one of my three major goals is to champion an effective financial management workforce. And I mentioned briefly earlier, I'll say a bit more about it now, what we're trying to do. First, I think this workforce that's out there now is generally well-trained. We have a lot of courses. We did a small thing early in my tenure here. We created a website that tried to catalog all the professional development courses available to financial managers through the U.S. government, and allow it to be searched based on where the courses were given, how they were given, what level they were appropriate for, and gave a website address so that people wanted to pursue them more, trying to make it easier to find ways for professional development. But the effort we're embarking in now to establish a course-based certification program for defense financial managers, I think, is the fundamental one that I think will be of good use. Our financial workforce, in my view, is well-trained, but what we don't have is a framework to provide them guidance on where they ought to be trained. Many of them get that through mentorship, and that's fine, and I hope it continues. But I would like a little more formal mechanism, and I would like to use that mechanism to require courses in critical areas. We've talked about audit. All our people need to understand why audits are important. They need some basic accounting training. Another area where I hope to use this framework to nudge this career field is toward a more analytic orientation. We're still pretty heavily oriented toward reports and producing them, and our managers need that, and I don't want to stop. But I hope as we install these new financial systems, they will make it easier to produce those reports. And there'll be more time to worry about how a manager makes changes, presenting options to him or her, assessing the value of those options, and then helping him carry out the decision, the analytic side of our business. And I hope you can train people to do that. I'm hoping to use this course-based certification to nudge people in that direction. So people are key. I try to keep that in mind. I'll just say early in my tenure as Air Force financial manager, a wise person, my principal deputy at the time, told me that your problem in this job, Bob, is the operating investment quotient, if you will, or ratio. You're going to be consumed by the day-to-day operations. You're going to need to get budgets out. You're going to need to work with Congress. You're going to need to answer the questions of the secretary. But you got to remember that when you walk out the door, that'll all go on. You want to spend some of your time making investments that actually make long-term changes. And I think the course-based certification is an example I would put in the investment criteria. And I try to devote some of my time to making sure that comes about. So too would auditable financial statements. I think people are important, and we're trying to take some steps to provide meaningful improvements in that area.
Bob, I'd like to turn to the future. If you will. What are some of the major opportunities and some challenges you think your organization will face in the future, and how do you anticipate evolving to meet those opportunities and challenges?
Well, some of them obviously will depend on national security requirements, which I don't think any of us can foresee very well. We mainly need to maintain flexibility in order to respond to what could be highly variable challenges in the future. Certainly, we're going to see technical evolution, probably greater and greater use of electronic media for communications. I entered the Navy in 1971, I believe. I was told that it was right around that year. I'm sorry, I entered the Navy in 1969. In the early 70s, the first email was sent by the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. Think how much emails have changed our life. Something will come along. I'm not sure I know what it is. We've got to be prepared to take advantage of those changes. But I go back to the fundamentals. I think the biggest thing will be maintain and develop and motivate a workforce that can get this job done. And we've talked some about that. But I think it's probably the most important way in which we can accommodate the future.
Right. What advice would you give someone who's thinking about a career in public service or the military?
Well, I'd do it. I have found it very satisfying. It's technically satisfying, at least in the Department of Defense and financial management. You're involved in financing one of the world's most complex and one of the world's largest organizations. There's a sense that you are meeting an important public need, which I find satisfying. But I think the biggest reason is something I'll call driving home satisfaction. It doesn't happen every day, but there are times when I drive home from work thinking that I have done something that day to actually help the men and women who, as I speak, are putting their lives on the line to defend our freedom. And that makes me feel good. And I think you can find that kind of driving home satisfaction not just in the Department of Defense, but in many other public sector jobs. So it's not for everyone, but I believe it can be very rewarding. And if you're thinking about it, I certainly hope you get a heavy thought and give it a try.
Well, Bob, I want to thank you for your time. But more importantly, John and I would like to thank you for your dedicated service to the country.
Well, thank you in return for the chance to be here. It's an honor to serve. It really is. It's an exciting and challenging time. And I appreciate the chance to spend a few minutes sharing my experience with you and your audience.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Robert Hale, Undersecretary of Defense and Comptroller at the U.S. Department of Defense. My co-host today from IBM has been John Vongelis. Be sure to join us next week for another informative, insightful, and in-depth conversation on improving government effectiveness. For the Business of Government Hour, I'm Michael Keegan, and thanks for joining us.
This has been the Business of Government Hour. Be sure to visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's conversation. Until next week, it's businessofgovernment.org.